I woke up when thunder rattled the old house above me. True, dark had fallen. I had no idea of what time it was. I lay in the bed for a moment, confused and a little dizzy. There was a warm spot on my legs, where Mister had been until a few moments before. But the big gray cat was nowhere to be seen. He was a chicken about thunderstorms. Rain was coming down in sheets. I could hear it on the concrete outside and on the old building above me. It creaked and swayed in the spring thunderstorms and wind, timbers gently flexing, wise enough with age to give a little, rather than put up stubborn resistance until they broke. I could probably stand to learn something from that. My stomach was growling. I got out of bed, wobbled a little, and rooted about for my robe. I couldn't find it in the dark, but came across my duster where Murphy had left it on the chair, neatly folded. Laying on top of it was a scattering of cash, along with a napkin bearing the words, "You will pay me back, Murphy." I scowled at the money and tried to ignore the flash of gratitude I felt. I picked up my duster and tugged it on over my bare chest, then padded on naked feet out into the living room. Thunder rumbled again, growling outside. I could feel the storm in a way that a lot of people can't, and most of those who can put it down to nerves. It was raw energy up there, naked and pulsing through the clouds. I could feel water in the rain and the clouds moving air, blowing the droplets in gusts against the walls of the house. I could sense, waiting, the fire of the deadly lightning, leaping from cloud to cloud above and seeking a path of least resistance to the patient, timeless earth that bore the brunt of the storm's attack. All four elements interacting, moving, energy flashing from place to place in each of its forms. There was a lot of potential in storms that a sorcerer could tap into if he was desperate or stupid enough. A lot of energy to be used up there, where the forces of ancient nature brawled and tumbled. I frowned thinking about that. It hadn't occurred to me before. Had there been a storm on Wednesday night? Yes, there had. I remember thunder waking me for a few moments in the hours before dawn. Could our killers have tapped into it to fuel his spells? Possibly. It bore looking into. Such tapped magic was often too unstable or volatile to use in such carefully directed fashion. Lightning flashed again, and I counted 3 or 4 seconds before the rumble reached me. If the killer was using storms, it would make sense that if he or she were to strike again, it would happen tonight. I shivered. My stomach growled, and more mundane matters took my attention. My head was feeling somewhat better. I wasn't dizzy anymore. My stomach was furious with me. Like a lot of tall, skinny men, I eat endlessly, but it never stays on. I have no idea why. I shambled into the kitchen and started building up the grill. "Mister," I called. "You hungry, bud? I'm gonna fry up some burgers." "Mm-mm-mm." Lightning flashed again, closer this time, the thunder following right on its heels. The flash was bright enough to sear through my half-sunken windows and make me wince against it. But in the flash of light, I caught sight of Mister. The cat was up on top of my bookshelf, on the far corner of the apartment, as far as it was possible to get away from my front door. He was watching it, his eyes luminous in the half-dark. And though he had the cat-lazy look of any lounging feline, his ears were tilted forward, and his gaze focused unwaveringly upon the door. If it had a tail, it would have been twitching. There came a knocking, a rapping, at my chamber door. Maybe it was the storm making me nervous, but I quested out with my senses, feeling for any threat that might have been there. The storm made a mess of things, and all of that noise, both physical and spiritual, kept me from being able to tell anything more than that there was someone outside my door. I felt in the pocket of my duster for the gun, but I remembered that I'd set it aside in the lab last night and not taken it with me down to the police station. Police don't take kindly to anyone but police toting firearms into a station, don't ask me why. In any case, it was out of easy reach now. And then I remembered that Linda Randall was supposed to show up. I berated myself for getting spooked so easy, and then again for sleeping in so long, and then again for looking and smelling like I haven't showered for a couple of days or combed my hair or shaved or anything else that might have made me marginally less unappealing. Oh, well. I got the impression that with Linda, that sort of thing doesn't seem to matter too much. Maybe she was into Odie Holmes. I walked over to the door and opened it, smoothing back my hair with one hand and trying to keep the sheepish grin off my face. Susan Rodriguez waited outside in the rain, her black umbrella held above her. She wore a khaki trench coat and an expensive black dress beneath it, with heels. Pearls shone at her throat and ears. She blinked at me when I peered at the door. Harry? I stared at her. Oh, my gosh. I'd forgotten my date with Susan. How in the world could I have forgotten that? I mean, the White Council, the police, vampires, concussions, junkies, mob bosses, and the baseball bat-swinging thugs notwithstanding. Well, no. There probably wasn't any woman incredible enough to keep my mind on them through all of that. But all the same, it seemed a little rude of me. Hi, Susan, I said lamely. I peered past her. When had Susan said she was going to show up? 9? And when had Linda said? 8? No, wait. She had said 8 o'clock at first, and then she had said she'd come by in another hour after that, at 9. Oh, boy. This was not going to be pretty. Susan read me like a book and glanced back behind her at the rain before looking back up at me. Expecting someone, Harry? Not exactly, I told her. Well, maybe. Look, come on in, you're getting drenched. Which wasn't exactly true. I was getting drenched. My bare feet soaked, standing there in the open door, the wind blowing rain down the stairwell at me. Susan's mouth quirked in a malicious, predatory smile, and she came in, folding down her umbrella and brushing past me. This is your apartment? Nah, I told her, this is my summer house in Zurich. She eyed me as I closed the door, took her coat, and hung it up on a tall, old wooden hat stand near the doorway. Susan turned away from me as I hung up her coat. Her dress showed her back, the long curve of her spine all the way down to her waist. It had a fairly tame hemline and long, tight sleeves. I liked it. A lot. She let me see her back for a while, and she walked away from me toward the fireplace, and then slowly turned to face me, smirking, leaning one smooth hip on the couch. Her midnight hair was bound up on top of her head, displaying a long and slender neck. Her skin, an advertisement for something smooth and wonderful. Her lips quirked up at the corner, and she narrowed her dark, flashing eyes at me. The police having you put in overtime, Harry? She drawled. The killings must be sensational. Major crime figure, murdered with magic. Care to make a statement? I winced. She was still hunting for an angle for the arcane. Sure, I told her. Her eyes widened in surprise. I need a shower, I said. I'll be right back. Mister, keep an eye on the lady, eh? Susan gave me a little roll of her eyes and then glanced up at the studied mister on his perch on the bookcase. Mister, for his part, flicked an ear and continued staring at the door. More thunder rumbled overhead. I lit a few candles for her, and then took one with me into the bathroom. Think, Harry. Get awake. Get your head clear. What to do? Get clean, I told myself. You smell like a horse. Get some cool water over your head and work this out. Linda Randall is going to be here in a minute, and you need to figure out how to keep Susan from prying her nose into the business of the murders. So advised, I agreed with myself and hurriedly got undressed and into the shower. I don't use a water heater, and consequently I am more than used to cold showers. Actually, given how often I, and wizards in general, get to date actual real women, maybe that's just as well. I was lathering up with shampoo when the lightning got a lot worse. The thunder a lot louder. The rain a lot harder. The height of the storm had hit the old house, and it hit hard. It was almost impossible to see clearly in the violent electrical discharge, almost impossible to hear over the thunder. But I caught a flicker of motion out of the corner of my eye, a shadow that moved across the sunken window, covered by modest curtains, in the bathroom. Someone was moving towards the stairs down to my apartment. Did I mention how I haven't had a ton of success with women? Nights like this one are a reason why. I panicked, hard. I leapt out of the shower, my head all a sudsy, wrapped a towel around my waist, and headed out into the front room. I couldn't let Linda just come to the door and have Susan answer it. That would be the cattiest thing you've ever seen, and I would be the one to get all the scratches and bites, too. I rounded the corner from my bedroom into the main room and saw Susan reaching for the doorknob. Lightning flashed again, and thunder kept me from hearing the knob's click-clack. I heard something else, though, a snarling, spitting sound, and saw Mister on his feet now, his back arched up and all his fur fluffed out, teeth bared, his no longer sleepy eyes fastened on the door. The thunder passed as Susan swung the door open. I could see her face in profile. One hand was on her hip, and there was an amused, dangerous little smile on her pretty mouth. As the door opened, I felt it. The cloud of energies that accompanies a spiritual being when it comes into the mortal world, disguised until now by the background clutter of the storm. A figure stood in the doorway, rather squat, less than 5 feet tall, dressed in a plain brown trench coat illuminated by the blue lightning overhead. There was something wrong to the shape, something that just wasn't part of good old Mother Earth. Its head turned to look at me, and sudden twin points of fire, as blue as the lightning dancing above, flared up, illuminating the leathery, inhuman curves of a face that most closely resembled that of a large and warty toad. Susan got a good look at the demon's eyes and face from 2 feet away and screamed. "Susan!" I shouted, moving already towards the couch. "Get out of the way!" I threw myself on the floor behind the couch, landing with a thump of hard floor hitting my ribs. The demon's jaws parted in a silent hiss, and its throat constricted weirdly as I vanished behind the couch. There was a hissing sound, and a heart-sized section of the couch just dissolved in a cloud of mist and foul stench. Droplets of liquid spattered through onto the floor near me, and where they touched, little holes corroded outward in the space of 2 seconds. I rolled away from the couch and the demon's acid. "Susan!" I shouted. "Get back towards the kitchen. Don't get between it and me." "What is it?" she screamed back at me. "A bad guy." I poked my head up and peered through the smoking hole in the couch, ready to duck back at a moment's notice. The demon, squat and bulkier than a human, was standing in the doorway, both long-fingered, pad-tipped hands leaning forward towards the inside of the house. It paused as though resting against a light screen. "Why isn't it coming in?" Susan asked from the far corner near the door. Her back was pressed to the walls, and her eyes were wide and terrified. "My God," I thought, "just don't pass out on me, Susan." "Homestead laws," I said. "It isn't a mortal creature. It has to gather its energy to push through the barrier around the home." "Can it get in?" she said. Her voice was thin and reedy. She was asking questions, gathering information, data, falling back on her ingrained career instincts because, I suspected, her rational brain had short-circuited. That happens to people who get a hard look at a demon for the first time.